Once again, for Community Focus, our public affairs program. And this morning, we'll be talking about something very special about the life of the late President Jimmy Carter, who went home to be the Lord back on Sunday at the age of 100. And here locally, we have someone who knew the president. And we're going to talk about that this morning, as our special guest this morning is the Reverend Robert L. Maddox. I'm going to call him Brother Bob, whose son Andy Maddox contacted me yesterday and said he'd be somebody I'd love to interview, and I would love to talk to him. He lives at the Phoenix where my dad lived before he passed away back in July. It is a pleasure to say, I'm going to call him and refer to him as Brother Bob, if that's okay for our listeners. And Brother Bob, it is great to have you with us, sir. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, so let's talk about, first off, sir, how did you know the late president?
I'm a minister, as you mentioned, maybe, and my first church out of seminary was Vienna, Georgia, down in Dooley County, 30 miles from Plains. Needed a supply preacher one summer, and everybody said, call Jimmy, because he was a lay preacher, as you know. So I did. I called him, and he said, sure, be glad to come. So actually, he came two summers. So we began our journey together in the summer of 1967. He was, I guess by then, he was state senator, and then he was running for governor and lost the first time to Lester Maddox, no kin, and kept running. That was Jimmy Carter. You don't stop.
Yes,
one defeat is not enough. You don't give up to that. So he was running hard. Very cordial, and a very good preacher. So our people in Vienna loved him from over in Plains.
So how long did you know him down in South Georgia?
What now?
How long did you know him down in South Georgia?
Well, see, I went to Vienna. I finished seminary in 1963, and Linda and I then became the pastor of the First Baptist Church of Vienna, Georgia. So that's when the whole connection with the Carter thing began. Andy was about 4 years old. Sort of spent the first 4 years of his life in deep South Georgia there. Cotton country, peanut country. It was a delightful time to be in that part of the world, even though it was still heavily segregated. I mean, completely segregated in the 60s. Linda and I had by then had discovered how unjust the whole segregation system was, and we began to do some stuff that made us nervous, civil rights activity. But the people of Vienna and Dooley County were gracious. I've always thought that by the 60s, they realized that the world was changing and they need to change with it. So they endured this kind of young radical preacher and listened carefully and began to change all the way around with us. It was a slow go, but many, many changes. And that fit very well with Jimmy Carter's changing attitude. There was a changing, growing, expanding attitude. You've heard him talk before. He grew up in the little bitty hamlet, it was not a town. It was just a little settlement out from Plains called Ranger. And that was the boyhood home where his father had a good-sized farm. And black families lived on the property. And one of those black kids was the same age as Carter. And they became best friends. And Carter would say that he spent as many nights on the floor of that black family as he did in his own bed in the house that his father had built. So all of these pieces in any of our lives begin to converge. And for Carter, and he did not stop growing. It was always a new adventure, a new calling, a new opportunity, even though some of them got him in lots of trouble.
Our special guest this morning on Community Focus is the Reverend Bob Maddox. He was a special friend to the late President Jimmy Carter. So real quick, what kind of relationship did your wife have with Miss Rosalind?
Very cordially. In 1979, by then we had moved to Calhoun, Georgia, up north Georgia. As it turned out, that was kind of a hotbed, I said, of Carterism. The president's oldest son, Jack, and his wife, Judy, were members of our Baptist church in Vienna. So we knew them. And then when Carter was elected, he came to Vienna twice for different events, and Rosalind came one other time by herself. And that was when Linda really began to connect with Rosalind. Rosalind was easy to connect with. I've told the story many times. I knew that Mrs. Carter was coming, the First Lady, to see Jack and Judy and baby Jason. I also knew that Judy didn't do much cooking. And so without telling Linda anything of a clue, that particular Sunday morning, I told her, I said, why don't you put a roast in the oven, we did that often. And you know, so fine, okay. And then when church service was over, I saw Rosalind and Jack and Judy kind of off in the corner talking. And I knew they were trying to figure out lunch. And at that time, there were not too many places in Calhoun where you could go to Sunday lunch. So I went over to them, and I said, why don't you all come to our house for lunch? Now, that's a great idea. They did that often. So then I went over, kind of sidled up to Linda, and I said, you better get home. We may have company. And she said, you did not. You did not do that. And by the time we got home, the big limousine was in the driveway, and Rosalind, the door was never locked. Rosalind and Jack and Judy had come in, and Rosalind had kicked her shoes off. And then when Linda got started with lunch, Rosalind helped her do it. I mean, you just did it. That's just the way that it was. And then out of all of those many experiences, we had the chance to go move to Washington and actually work with President Carter in
really?
The White House for 2 years.
Tell me about that. How'd you move to Washington?
I'd already, by then, that was 77, 78. I had begun to do a lot of writing. I've always liked to write, but I had begun to do a lot of writing. And I was writing a lot of Sunday school lessons for Baptists. That's the way we did it. We had the little quarterlies and all.
Yes, sir.
So I'd already met Jody Powell. And so every now and then, Jody would call and say, the president is doing this, that, or the other. Give us some ideas about that, which was delightful for me to be.
Go back for a moment. Yeah. That was my first election I ever voted in, was in 76 when he defeated Gerald Ford.
Right.
So was Jody Powell, was that his press secretary, or was he had another position?
Jody grew up in Vienna. Jody if there was aristocracy in Vienna and Dooley County, his family was aristocracy. His grandfather was chairman, president of the bank. His father had a big farm. His mother was a renowned school teacher. So they were aristocracy. And then Jody, as he finished high school there in Vienna, got an appointment to the Air Force Academy in Colorado.
Right.
Another whole story. We had just moved in, really had not hardly moved in, and my little office was full of the boxes of books. And Jody called and said, I've had to leave the academy. He said, I broke the honor code.
Uh-oh.
And he had done that. He talked about that. And so he came by the office that night, and we talked to the wee hours about his life and what he did. So I'm saying all of those pieces began to come together, and out of that came the opportunity for us to go move to Washington. We moved to Washington, and I worked as a speechwriter, and I named myself religious liaison for the White House for President Carter. So that took us to the White House.
So were you serving as a pastor up in the D.C. area then, or
not? No. I was full-time at the White House.
Full-time?
I went to work at the White House. Went to work at the White House.
So tell me, what do you think about him even becoming president of the United States, even thinking about running for president?
What now?
What do you think about Jimmy Carter even thinking about becoming president and then running for president?
Well, the joke all over was, president of what? President of what? The joke, it was not. By then we knew what he was thinking. But Jack came by my office one day, my office at the church, and said, by the course of the governor, my father is thinking of running for president. And I immediately came back with the joke, president of what? He ran a great campaign. It was a very smart campaign. Jody and Hamilton Jordan realized that the key in that early time was the Iowa primary. And they decided if they could win, if Carter could win the Iowa primary, that would set him on the track. And so they did. They lived in a year in Iowa, and Carter talks about walking up and down the streets of Iowa, and he and by then his army of the Peanut Gallery, Peanut Brigade, and all like that, would just to anybody and everybody and say, my name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president. And they slept there. They slept on the couches with people. It was that kind of classic campaign. It probably looked rather haphazard, but knowing Carter and Hamilton and Jody, it was very carefully planned. And then people began to pour in from around Georgia and then the larger part of the country to help him campaign in Iowa, and he won that campaign.
I do remember.
That set him on the road.
Trying to remember who was his opponents there on the Democratic side. I'm trying to remember who even.
Oh, there was Jackson. A lot of the big guns, of Democrats.
What, like Ed Muskie, maybe, that kind of thing, back in those days?
Who?
Like Ed Muskie, maybe, from up in the Northeast or somebody.
I don't remember. I just don't remember.
Yeah, I don't either. But I do remember how close a race it was.
Oh, yeah.
Because I know even the Atlanta Journal-Constitution had that famous front page where it had Ford defeating Carter. He held that up because it was one of the closest races ever in our history.
And he ran against Gerald Ford,
yes,
who was a man of ability and character. And Carter and Ford became good friends, really good friends.
Really?
And Carter did the final eulogy for Walter Mondale.
Really?
Mondale's funeral, like those big funerals,
wow,
like Carter's, is moved around. And the Ford family asked Jimmy Carter to come and do the final eulogy.
Wow.
In Grand Rapids. So they became very good friends. The one time I really shook hands with Gerald Ford was at the Carter Center.
Wow.
Carter had invited him for something or another, and they were cordial friends. Carter became, he got beat. I mean, Reagan stomped him. But Carter and Rosalynn were big enough that they were not going to let that hurt them or hurt the country.
Well, I got to believe for his faith that he just knew that wasn't meant to be for him to be in
well,
a second
that's
term.
That's it. Many stories. After the election, the president's secretary called me one day. This was, I don't know when it was, early December maybe. And she said, the president and first lady would like for you and Linda to come to dinner in the residence, if you can arrange it. And I said, I think I can arrange that. You know, I wasn't joking. So sure enough, we did. We went up and had dinner with them. The word by then was out that Nancy Reagan had bought a $10,000 mink coat to wear in the parade, in the inaugural parade in January, anticipating cold weather.
Right.
So we got off of the elevator in the residence, which is always a fun experience, and met at the elevator with Rosalynn and the president. And Rosalynn and Linda, by then good friends, Linda had written a book about Rosalynn and all. Linda got off of the elevator and hugged Rosalynn. Linda said, I hope it's 100 degrees on on inaugural day. And Rosalynn said, me too. I hope it's. And then the president said, we'll have none of that. Now, the election is over. We will have none of that. And then Rosalynn said, very cryptically, very really honestly, Bob, what does this mean? What is the plan of God for Jimmy and me? We had so much more that we wanted to do. And I said, Rosalind, I do not speak for God. But I said, I have the idea that you will be able to do a lot more now as ex-president than you probably could do as president. And then she said, but I don't want to be ex-president. And we kind of laughed and cried and understood what she meant.
Oh, yeah.
But I was not trying to be a prophet, but they were.
That's, oh, absolutely.
Their life was really made the huge difference in the world for the rest of their days
sure
until
did.
They both just wore out, her last year and him this past Sunday. They made a difference in the world.
Oh, no doubt about it. Again, our guest this morning on Community Focus is the Reverend Bob Maddox, who worked with the president and Jimmy Carter passing back on Sunday, reliving some of his days. So tell me about, Andy told me that you helped write the Camp David speech. Tell us
I
about
did.
That.
That was another one of those very serendipitous moments. That fateful day that Rosalind came to our house for lunch was the weekend of Labor Day. And Rosalind and I sat at the dining room table at our house and talked for a couple of hours about Camp David. And actually, she left from Calhoun, drove to Chattanooga, and caught the plane to D.C. to go to Camp David. So I knew sort of inside about Camp David, though the whole world was noticing that Begin and Sadat had gone to Camp David with President Carter. So they thought they had an agreement, and it fell apart, back and forth. So in January, Carter, against all advice, typically Carter, went to the Middle East and flew back and forth between Egypt, between wherever, Cairo, wherever the capital was, and Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, back
right.
and forth,
mm-hmm.
trying to get again an agreement between Begin and Sadat. And then on a rainy Sunday night, I remember, he landed at Andrews Air Force Base, Carter did, and said, we have an agreement. And so then I began to say, he will need a speech for that. So a very good friend of mine named Walker Knight had coined the phrase, peace like war is waged. Waging
wow.
peace. Peace
wow.
like war is waged. And so I just set about to write a speech for that. I was pastor in Calhoun, Georgia. We didn't have email. We didn't have fax. It was just snail mail. I wrote the speech. Linda looked at it, and another great friend, Edna Langford, looked at it. They thought it was a good speech and thought I was just out of my mind to think that something like that would happen. But sure enough, I sent it to a friend that I had made at Mrs. Carter's office. And then about 3 hours before the big event on the North Lawn of the White House, Jody called and said, you'd better get to a TV because the president is using your speech.
Wow.
So that very serendipitously, he used the phrase, wage peace like war is waged. And now a part of the motto of the Carter Center is waging peace. Whether that's a carryover from my speech, I don't know. But the phrase is stuck. And I very honestly said that a friend of mine had made that. I mean, I had just picked it up from him somewhere and built a speech around that.
Brother
and
Bob,
that took me to the White House.
Oh, okay. That's why I was wondering how you got to the White House then. So, Brother Bob, for a moment, talk to our listeners and tell them, to me, I'm comparing this when President Reagan went there to the Berlin Wall and said, Mr. Gorbachev, tear this war down. This was about the same type of thing between Egypt and Israel at that time. This was a very historic event that took place.
Very historic. They had been at loggerheads, but they had been at each other's throat. There had been war back and forth between those two countries.
I mean, we're talking about from 67 with the Six-Day War to this
all
time.
All of that.
Right.
Yeah, that is one of those important moments, experiences in history when the war after World War II and the horrors of the Holocaust began to emerge, then the world leaders did agree that Israel, that worldwide Jews needed a homeland, and worked it out. It's very complicated for Israel, really, I guess, to become a two-state nation between the Palestinians and the Jews. Those parts of it, I don't remember all of that.
Oh, sure.
But, yeah, it was very historic. And that treaty between Egypt and Israel still holds. With all of the horrible stuff that is going on over there and still going on today.
And they're at peace. They always have been, haven't they? Those two nations between Egypt and Israel have been basically at peace has been the other nations in the Middle East, right?
Right, yeah, yeah. It's a historic event and was one of the highlights of Carter's, probably the most memorable piece of his presidency.
So did you stay throughout David, the rest of his presidency? Were you with him through the time of the election then, through in 80?
I was there through 80. I began working May of 1979.
Okay.
That speech took me, there was already conversation about me going to the White House. I had always wanted to do it. My joke was that if he had invited me earlier, he probably would have won. You know, that was my joke. So I got to go to work at the White House. And quickly, really with Rosalind's nudging, began to do the religious work. Carter had thought, if I'm reading his mind, that because he was so clearly a Christian and teacher and Sunday school and all that, that he would continue to carry the religious community. But pretty quickly became apparent that even though his born-again word had helped him get into the White House, that the forces were really aligning against him. Carter, on abortion, would say, "I'm opposed to abortion, but it's the law of the land, and I will uphold that." And the far right by then had become politicized, and abortion had become politicized. And then also the whole thing of gay rights. Excuse me.
Even back then?
Carter had gay people, a few gay people, on his staff.
Really?
Yes.
Wow. Well, to me, wasn't the biggest thing, he had two things on my mind, and I'm going back to my earlier days of life. Remember, I was in college at that time. Trying to remember, the two big things were the economy, with the interest rates skyrocketing.
Well, he really hit, if there is a perfect storm, he hit it.
Right.
Interest rates were out the roof, 15, 20% interest. The energy crisis,
exactly.
Gas lines.
And then, of course, the terrorists.
And then the hostages.
Yes,
the hostages
were
the nail
that was
in the political coffin. There's no doubt about that. And the debates between Carter and Reagan. Carter was not a snazzy
elegant speaker.
No. And to go up against Reagan, who was.
Yes.
Reagan, smooth as glass. And he carried it. Debates were pivotal for giving the presidency to Reagan. And then the race was on, and on Sunday before the election on Tuesday, Jody called me and said, "Bob, it's over. We're not going to pull this out."
Uh-huh.
And it was a terrible. We were living in Northern Virginia. It was a terrible, if my memory is right, terrible, rainy, cold day. And Linda and I went to the mall, what else, and walked and had lunch there and wept about the impending doom for Carter. He had a lot of support, popular support, but Reagan wiped him out in the college. He killed him.
So tell me, Brother Bob, the last few minutes we have here, our program this morning, it's been a special time talking about your relationship with the president. How about your relationship with the president after he lost the election?
We decided that we would not live out of that moment. It would not be the big touchdown pass in the final seconds. But we decided also, Lynn and I did, that we would do our best to make the most of the time that we had with them. We went on with our lives. But with family in Georgia, we often were in Georgia. We were living in Maryland, moved to Texas and all, briefly. But we went to Plains a lot. Two or three times a year, we would find a way to go to church with the Carters in Plains. That by then, the new Maranatha Baptist Church had been founded. And they were always unfailingly
cordial with us. That's where President Carter was at, right? That was his home church.
That's his home church.
Yes.
He taught. He was teaching Sunday school. It was before that it had become so huge. And so we went to Sunday school with them a few times. They had a person that was running all of that show. And they were always very cordial, let us sit with them. To say that we were on a drop-by for coffee that's not accurate. But we were very cordially received by the Carters. They knew us all the way. We had had some really nice times with them in Washington at the White House, Camp David and all. So we followed his career. I had a job in Washington, and I came back from lunch one day, and the secretary said, he called and said he was Jimmy Carter. And I said, well, let's assume that it was Jimmy. And it was President Carter calling to say that he and Rosalind were doing their first, quote, build with Habitat. And he wanted me to give him some names of people who might go with them on that first build.
Wow.
And I was able to name several, and two of whom stayed with him for years on that.
How about that? Wow.
So, yeah, we kept up with them afterwards. And last saw them right before the pandemic set in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow. Brother Bob, to me, of all the presidents, don't forget about anybody's political beliefs, separate what Jimmy Carter was as a president those 4 years and then after his days. I don't think of any president in our history who has had a greater afterlife as president.
He will go down in our history as a very substantial president as time goes by, but as the greatest ex-president we've had. So many pieces of that. Carter absolutely refused to do the big, extraordinarily well-paid speeches. He said, I have enough money. I can do what I need to. I don't need to do those $200,000 speeches. And he and Rosalind lived quietly, simply would not be it, but they went back to Plains and lived there, and that's where they died.
Yeah, and really lived a different kind of life than
they were world citizens. They were world citizens, no doubt, made a huge difference in the world with health. They helped eradicate several terrible diseases, guinea worm and things like that, watching the political processes in many, many countries. Outstanding people, very, very down to earth, very earnest, down to earth people. I'd had an emergency operation, semi-emergency operation, a few years ago, and I was recovering in the hospital. The phone rang, my cell phone rang, and I answered the cell phone, and the voice was, Bob, this is Jimmy. How are you doing?
Oh, wow.
So it was just that easy for them, for us with them. So we cherished the time. We never did capitalize on it. We enjoyed it, and deeply grateful for the chance to know the Carters and other members of their family. But President and Mrs. Carter were unique people, and the honor of our lives is to have, I've said, to know and be known by them. And so it was a great experience.
Brother Bob, I cannot thank you enough for joining us this morning to talk about the president. It's been a pleasure to hear more about it, sir. I look forward to talking to you later, okay?
Okay.
Brother Bob Maddox has been our guest this morning on Community Focus. We've got much more for you coming up next as we bring you the latest news from GNN on 97.5 Glory FM.